To be your host again. Oh, yes, more fun on the way. You know, our commitment is to bring you value. We basically have put forward a strong intention to bring you things that are going to support you to have better lives. There's a lot more words I could put to it, but it's really that simple, helping you to live better and helping to make it as easy as possible for that to happen. And the beauty, each of our guests has something unique to bring to your life that is another piece of the puzzle for you to live a better life, take better care of yourself, your family, your neighborhood, the community, the country, the world. Yes, I don't know. We could go intergalactic. I don't know. But for now, let's just start close to home and help take care of ourselves here. One of the things today, so blessed to have back a wonderful guest. We had her on recently. Tamara Banks, who is quite a prolific young woman. She has been in the media for a number of years and in front of the camera of giving news broadcasts. Well, now she has, after 20 years of that, has shifted her career, and she is a freelance journalist, documentary filmmaker, and she is creating social change through excellence in journalism, and has literally organized teams of journalists in some pretty exciting areas in Africa, where essentially, as we know here, to have a free press, to have media where we can turn to for important information is huge. And if the media is controlled and the information people are receiving is controlled, they may not be getting important information that could help their lives. Well, yes, Tamara, when you look at her, if you go to her website, yourtazmedia.org, there's no bandana. This is not the look of a female Che Guevara, but she is definitely out there as a wonderful patriot for global peace. And we are just so thrilled and delighted. She has traveled to Sudan and Darfur, and basically in the midst of countries with great conflict, has done some amazing documentary work. Slavery in our country has been handled, but globally it's still a major issue. And she's gone into these areas and will tell us more about that, because when we reach out and help anywhere on the planet, we know any time we're helping someone, it's actually a help to ourselves. So we'll get into a conversation, because she's coming back from a recent trip to Sudan, and will give us some information about that, and we'll intertwine that with how we can apply this to make your lives better and just have fun in the whole process, folks. So sit back, relax, and welcome Tamara.
Thank you. Great to be back with you.
Oh, what a pleasure. I am so excited for the folks in the Colorado and the Denver area, or if you're able to just fly in on a whim, Tamara's got a couple of events coming up where you can actually view her documentary. And we would be able to see that, what, by going to your website?
I need to update my website. I need a 12-year-old in my household. So if you get to it before I update it, I can tell you if you'd like me to share that information now.
Yes, please, because you just don't know who's going to be telling who about this and where they're going to show up. We're going to get the word out, and I want to give them every opportunity to know about this.
Absolutely. So tomorrow night at Jazz at Jack's, which is in the Denver Pavilions on 16th Street Mall and about Glen Arm in downtown Denver, we're going to be showing what we'll have a screening for my documentary short. And so anything that's less than 30 minutes is considered a short. And this is about 14 minutes long. It's called The Long Journey Home. And we'll start gathering around 5:30 and mingling and chatting with people and having, soda pop or whatever you want. And then I'll start the program around 7 o'clock where I will introduce the film. We'll watch that for 14 minutes, and then we'll come back with Q&A with myself and Pastor Heidi McGinnis with Christian Solidarity International. She's one of the abolitionists who'll be working, who's been working with freeing the slaves. And that is a small donation of $10 that goes to sustain independent journalists, specifically this independent journalist. And then on Sunday, on Father's Day, June 21st, at the El Camino Tavern in the Highlands, which is the 32nd and Lowell. It's a really wonderful restaurant there. And for $25 tax-deductible donation, you can speak with Pastor Heidi McGinnis again and myself, and we'll have chips and salsa and beer and wine that will be included in that $25 price. But the whole idea is to really get this momentum building and a movement about heightening awareness and raising the consciousness of crimes against humanity and this genocide that's occurring in Darfur and Sudan right now. It's a slavery as a tool of genocide that the world is turning their head and closing their eyes about. And President of Sudan, Omar al-Bashir, is getting away with murder. And this film and the abolitionists that I feature in it and the grassroots groups that are working to free the slaves, we'll talk about that and shed some light on the issue.
That's just wonderful. So, folks, when you check in on this, and there'll be more information on her website about this and ways to contribute to this, because her work, she's going to take this, if I'm understanding, to people at documentary film festivals, so that it can receive some of the acclaim that it deserves, and help this cause, which is so very important, because any time, as it says in many of the religions of the world, Christianity, Judaism, whatever you do to my brother, you do to me. And so when she's out there doing this, and yes, Sudan, Darfur, Africa, that's a bit far away from here, the U.S., but the implications of it are right next to home. Any time there is some form of infringement on someone, some form of restriction, when there's a loss of freedom, it affects all of us. And when we stand strong and begin to hold people accountable, which she is helping to do, helping to draw attention to this, then it just lifts all of us. And I guess that's part of what you're wanting to do, isn't it, Tamara?
It is. It does lift all of us. And as you mentioned, I don't remember the specific verse in the Bible, but it does talk about how when one portion of the body hurts, the entire body hurts. And we are all, as members of the human race, we are all one body. So when we have people suffering in other parts of the world, it really does impact all of us in one way or the other. And unfortunately, we don't realize that it does, and so we're walking around as wounded as anybody else around the globe, and with no rhyme or reason why. And I believe that once we're able to heighten the awareness about issues like this, then we can start taking action. And people, when they hear about, you know, things like slavery in Sudan and genocide, I think it's overwhelming for some people, and they don't really know what to do, and it's easy to just want to stay in bed and pull the covers over your head and say, you know, I'm just really trying to figure out how I'm going to put food on the table, let alone liberate slaves. And so my theory is the best way to eat an elephant is one bite at a time.
Ah.
And so that simply means just one bite. Learn more. Support journalists. Go deeper into issues. Ask questions. Demand that the media give you more information on particular issues. Read books that aren't just the top bestsellers. Read other books that, you know, maybe aren't as popular, but maybe they're not as popular because people don't have a big publicist behind them. So just dig deeper a little bit more and get more educated. And then I think people will be amazed how many organizations there are in the world, specifically as it addresses Darfur and Sudan, from Save Darfur to the Nuba Water Project, which was started here in Denver just a couple of years ago, rather, where some engineers and water experts, if you will, realized that people in the Nuba Mountains in Sudan, while they had rain, they didn't have aquifers or dams or bridges and such to be able to hold and retain water. So they started a program, another program, Project Educate Sudan, that works on building schools in Sudan. So there's so many ways to affect change, and people should feel like, you know, particularly this time, rather than hoarding and feeling like, oh gosh, my bank account isn't what it used to be, maybe this is a time where it's more important than ever, to share what we do have, because whatever we have is so much more than most people around the world.
Yeah, I think that's so very important, especially from a standpoint of different life perspectives. In our country, we may take many things for granted that in other countries are absolutely not available. And one example, there was a philanthropist, Armand Hammer, of the Armand Hammer Baking Soda Company. And he, with his philanthropic ways, went into Russia many years ago and built a factory that made pencils, which was a huge uplift to their school system.
Right.
So what I'm thinking... And perhaps, I don't know if it's through, is it Reverend Heidi? And we can possibly share her information,
mm-hmm.
that coordinating of different resources, I don't know if they're in that position or if their focus is only on the, you know, the abolitionist thing. But we would like to help people who have different resources to contribute know that, yes, there's many things that can be done that, that could be as simple as some school supplies. Who knows?
Right. And that's the thing. Everybody can do something. And so my area of expertise, my gift that I've been blessed with is telling stories. Telling stories for people who don't normally get the news coverage. And so that's why I decided that this was a story that I could tell, because I am healthy and I have, you know, somewhat of a half a mind. You know, I've got some intelligence and some skill that I can go to Sudan for 2 or 3 weeks at a time and camp and take the gear with me and shoot video and get the interviews needed to tell the story. And I do have a bit of a voice and a platform here in Denver and throughout the country to be heard. And so while there's so many others that can't be heard, I am heard, so I'm using that, what I know, what I've been blessed with to affect change.
Ah,
and everybody can do that.
Sure. And folks, if we put forward a prayer request, I haven't heard you mention that this material has been presented to Oprah or that you've been on her program, so if that hasn't happened yet.
That hasn't happened yet. I'm working toward that. I've gotten some information about, you know, to some of her producers. I know some folks in the business, you know, since I'm in the business, I know some folks. So that is in the work. So that's, you know, she has even larger voice than I do. So it would be great to have that kind of support, definitely. So I would surely appreciate your prayers in that direction. And as you mentioned, Kenneth, this is my second trip to the region, and again, I'm just stunned at man's inhumanity to man. But a couple of interesting things that I found that I stumbled across in this trip that I didn't before, just to give people an idea of what the story is if they're not quite clear yet. In between 1983 and 2005, there was a quote-unquote civil war. That's what the West wanted to call it, between the North and the South. And really what it was the government-backed John Dreweed would go down, the devil on horseback, from the North to rape, pillage, and burn, and kill. Burn villages, kill people, kill the livestock, kill the wild animals. And all of this was based on the fact, because these folks in the South are black, they're indigenous to the area, and they're Christians. And the leaders at the time and currently are Islam extremists. And I always tell people this is not a conversation that's anti-Muslim or anti-Islamic by any means. But whenever you get extremists into your title, there's going to be some issue most often. And so in 2005, this peace agreement was signed, and so the slave raids that occurred, the burning of the villages stopped, and the bombs stopped, technically. But what didn't happen in that peace agreement, there were no provisions, no mechanisms put in place to have the slaves who were taken from the South and brought up to the North and made slaves in the North, there were no provisions for them to come back home. So these people, tens of thousands of people, remain in slavery today. So the story that I'm working on is that slavery that still occurs today, and that there are abolitionists who put their lives on the line to free these folks.
Yeah.
And so it's a situation where I've mentioned before where sometimes you go to an international place, go to a foreign country as a journalist, and you sweat and you break nails and you do these hard things during the day, and then you come home to a hotel room at night and maybe, you know, have a nice meal. But at night, I slept in a tent, pitched a tent, slept in a sleeping bag, guarded against scorpions. And I think that puts a different spin on the story a little bit. That tells you how remote this area is. And that's one of the reasons I think why the West is sort of gullible in whatever they believe that comes out of Khartoum, out of the nation's capital there.
Uh-huh.
So it's an amazing place.
Wow. So now, the Khartoum, that's the government agency in the north?
That is the capital of the entire region of Sudan.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so they, I don't know if they're aware of what you're doing, or, I mean, it doesn't sound like they'd be any too happy.
Well, they wouldn't be too happy. I would say it's probably hard for me to go into Khartoum with, you know, without watching my back these days. So, I mean, you just have to do what you have to do and just be really smart about, you know, where I am, who's around me, and just, you know, literally watch my back. But it is a dangerous story to tell, because the issue is that the president of Sudan, Omar al-Bashir, will not admit that slavery occurs. He'll call it something else. So he's ignoring the entire issue. But as you probably know, the International Criminal Court filed charges against him last year, crimes against humanity. And I guess it was in March of this year, he kicked out all the humanitarian aid groups out of Darfur. So a bad situation has turned worse. So the answer is, who knows what the answer is? The question is, what do we do? Can the West get involved? Should the West get involved? What can the United Nations do? Because right now it's just the difference between going last year and this year. This year I could feel it was more dangerous for me to be there, and so I was only there 2 weeks versus 3 weeks compared to last year.
Oh, wow. So that's important. And most of the time you were in remote areas?
Yeah, very much so. It takes a few days to get to where we need to be, flying from Denver to the East Coast, to Europe, into Nairobi, Kenya. Then from Nairobi, Kenya, we get into South Sudan, into Juba. And then from there, it's just, you know, charter planes or whatever we can hitch a ride on to get into the bush, because there are no airports where we go. There are no restaurants, no hotels, no bus stations. I mean, there's no roads, and because everything was destroyed by the Janjaweed, and that's why it makes me smirk when the West calls this a civil war, when in fact they were killing people and their livestock and the children and the civilian and the wild animals, burning bridges and tearing up railroad tracks. Those are all indicators of genocide. So now what's happening in Darfur, we're hearing about what's happening in Darfur, the same issue. And what my instinct tells me is that if extreme thugs who call themselves presidents of countries and heads of state are allowed to commit genocide in one part of the world, what's to say that they won't continue on to other parts of the world? I mean, do we really think that Hitler was just going to stop at the German borders? I mean, if he had been left to go on and carry on, and had we not battled that war for so many years, who knows how far he would have gone.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he absolutely, it was about global domination, as best that I know of his plan.
Exactly.
And if you didn't fit the mold, then you were going to make an early exit from the planet.
And whenever you have people using religion as an excuse, as a means to justify their end when it comes to murder and mutilations and rape, I mean, we have a real problem. I don't think any god, no matter what you call him, wants us to treat our brothers and sisters like that.
No, that's been one of the things of in my time around some ecumenical groups, or groups that are basically wanting to find the common ground of the different global religions. They speak of common values, caring for, respect for each other, respect for children, for women, respect for life, and there isn't really this thing that says God tells you to kill everyone that isn't like you. That's
mm-hmm.
not the mainstream thought of any religion.
Right. I mean, that's man, human beings justifying what they want to do in terms of corruption and murder and control, and using the Bible or the Quran or whatever to justify it.
Yeah. Now, I don't know. I'm just kind of drawing upon different resources because when I first thought about this, as most people would, imagining, you know, children being slaughtered, women, I mean, families, all this stuff destroyed, I mean, that tears one up. It hurts any heart to see that or imagine it, and sometimes it brings people to a place of anger and resentment at the perpetrators that would have the unmitigated gall to act in this kind of massively abusive way. I know I had to pause to remind myself that the spiritual teachings of Christianity talks about love your enemy,
right.
to not hate, and so my invitation in that was to want to take action, but not to do it from a place of hatred within myself, because anger feelings tend to, there's a saying, one of the ministers I love, he would say, holding resentment for someone is like taking poison and waiting for the other person to die.
Right.
And that hatred
just eats you up more than it's eating up that other person. But it is a real test of forgiveness and reconciliation. I mean, as the victim, as a direct victim as well. The reconciliation, all of that is part of the healing or the rehabilitation, and that takes a really strong, really enlightened person or group of people to even acknowledge that, let alone be able to do that. And I think, too, the more one is traveled and well, you know, fairly well-read, you realize that every group has their bad apple. I mean, we certainly don't hate Germans now, and we shouldn't in the 1940s either. We shouldn't have in the 1940s either. But when you start looking at history and looking at things, you know, hindsight is 20/20. You can see that there's rarely, I can comfortably, confidently say never, an entire group of people that are evil. It all it takes is a bad seed, one person, and a bad policy. The combination of that really can be detrimental, but it's not the human being. So when you realize that we're all human beings, that we shouldn't hate a group of people or even an individual for what he or she is doing, because that doesn't solve anything. And that's not really the core of the issue, the core of the problem. Nothing will get solved that way.
Yeah. There was a gentleman that traveled into Eastern Europe. I don't know if you've heard of what they call indigo children. Basically talking about some of the youngsters that are being born in the past, say, 10 or 15 years, of being very tuned in to love and compassion. And so he was doing some research, and he went over, I think, into Czechoslovakia, and was meeting with some of them, and at the time they were talking about, I believe, one of the presidents of the United States, where there was a lot of negative energy being directed at them for not wanting to, people were just angry at the way they were running the government.
Mm-hmm.
And these children, their recommendation of the best thing they could do to get a change of policy was to send love to this president who people had these major issues with.
Mm.
And that when enough love was sent to that person by enough people, that it would actually change their heart.
Right.
And so to me, I like that idea that we can, it ties back in, love your enemy.
Right.
It's like, and hear the children going, yes, it does us no good. It poisons us to be angry. Doesn't mean we don't want to take action, like donate money to your organization, or what's the other organization they could donate to?
Christian Solidarity International.
Okay. And is there a particular website?
Yes, it is. For CSI, it's www.csi-int.org.
Okay.
And that is for the direct donations that will help specifically the people who are still enslaved, CSI, Christian Solidarity International. And I am not a 501c3, but my church at the time being right now is acting as my fiscal agent. So if people were interested in finding out more how they can support an independent journalist like myself, so that I can do the work there because I don't have corporate TV behind me, you can email me at TamaraTaz@msn.com. And that's T-A, M as in Mary, A-R-A, T-A-Z as in zebra, TamaraTaz@msn.com. And then I can send you information.
Oh, okay. And I guess another thing that could be done, if we're looking at ways to support you, you're part of your profession, because of all your background in journalism and major network television as an anchor for many years, your company, Taz Media, can you talk a little bit about some of the services that you can offer?
Absolutely. Taz Media is an LLC, and so what I provide, I'm producing documentaries, which we've talked about. I'm also producing videos, primarily, but not exclusively, but it just seems to be my focus for organizations that are transforming lives and working in the area of social justice. For example, I've produced videos for the Iowa School of Theology, the Kemp Foundation that deals with abused and neglected children, Nuba Water Project, the organization that is building aquifers and dams in the Nuba Mountains in Sudan. And so that is really a way to generate income, as well as I do some media training. I just finished the other day a media training for Metro State College, and some media consulting. And then I've got, of course, the show on PBS, on Channel 12 on KBDI, called Studio 12. And I'm also doing some freelance work for HDNet. It's a new network, and it's where Dan Rather went after he left CBS. And the station, the network, rather, is owned by Mark Cuban, owner of the Dallas Mavericks. And HDNet is just doing amazing programming and news stories all over the world. So as it relates to TAS Media, it's sort of those silos of video producing, documentaries, media training, and media consulting.
Ah, okay. So that means that not only if someone had a good cause to promote, there would also be a business that wants to get more exposure?
Absolutely. But it helps, for example, if an organization wanted to, you know, you go to a luncheon or a dinner and they have a video presented sometime during the program, I produce those with a number of photographers and editors that I work with, and we can, you know, produce a really nice piece for you that is a marketing tool, a fundraising tool, just an awareness tool. Maybe it's an internal. Maybe it's used internally to help connect people in your organization, a recruiting tool, that sort of thing. So it's a lot of fun because you get to meet great people like I have in news, but also spend more time with them rather than just a few minutes grabbing their interviews. Really get to delve into what they're all about. Some really good organizations, like I said, the Kemp Foundation, the Allen School of Theology, the Spring Institute, which works with refugees who have come to the U.S. and need some help on acculturating into the U.S. So if you're out there and you're thinking, boy, we need a video for that dinner fundraiser thing we've got coming up in, you know, September, October, November, or whenever, let me know. As I said, you can email me at TamaraTaz@msn.com, and my information is also on my website at YourTazMedia.com.
That's YOURTAZ, like as in like a Tasmanian devil, the spinning dancer, because she is such a whirling dervish of positive energy for global peace. So
exactly.
Your tazmedia.org or email tamarataz@msn.com.
Yes.
Now, I couldn't help as you were talking, and I'm looking on your website at a picture, and that's you with a group of people around a table for some gathering purpose,
Oh, and I have a camera with me?
Yes.
Yes.
And but I couldn't help but be curious about, because of the power of media, and this is just an off-the-wall idea that I put out there to you, to my listeners, to come up with something creative. But I am picturing you as a modern-day Mr. Rogers. And I say that from the standpoint that that interacting with children, and especially as a media person, it's all about communication, and communication and good communication is so important for quality relationships.
Right.
And to me, the media and what they are doing to bring forth and to research to step beyond the idea of rumors and to find actually what's going on, where sometimes people would jump to conclusions, but to have children receive some of your inspiration about dig deep, find the facts, then take action based on the facts, not on rumors.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is a bit vague, but somehow I am just feeling a yearning of children to be basically instructed or taught some of the things so that they can learn to be good investigators as they start to receive all this information and sort through it so they can be discerning to make good lives. Does that make any sense?
And that's a really good point. I do speak at schools, you know, from age, you know, kindergarten through college and universities, that you do have to be able to discern the information that you're reading, seeing, and hearing. And how do you do that? And I talk a little bit about that, about, you know, we'll just read beyond the headline. And often, I know me, I get stuck sometimes. I'm just so busy, all I read is a headline. And, you know, nothing against editors, but, you know, that's what their job is, to catch your eye. You buy that paper, and there you go. And you might not even read the article, let alone read it all the way through. I encourage people, even if it's just an article that you're reading, read it all the way through, because sometimes you won't really get to the real story until at the end of the article, because what's the newest and latest information is at the beginning. But not everybody reads that story or is up to speed on that issue every day. So, you know, and listening, reading the other newspapers that are not your daily newspapers. So this is exactly the conversation I have with young people, discerning that information, because they have so much access to not just TV, but the Internet and all sorts of media. They're just being bombarded. And so while we use media, it is a powerful tool, and we can use it for good, it can also be used for bad. And so we really have to do a much better job, more than we did when I was growing up, and we had, you know, three networks. We have to do a better job of making sure our kids are prepared and have the tools that they need to really understand what they're listening to. The commercials are sending you a subliminal message, and what is that message? And do you really need those jeans, or is it just because you've heard that message, you know, 15 times today? That's
yeah.
Sort of thing.
Yeah, that's I'm going a bit far afield, but there was research, Wilson Brian Keyes and Vance Packard years ago wrote a lot about the use of subliminals in advertising.
Mm-hmm.
And how powerful it was. And I saw in taking some a class on this that you could look at many magazines today, and if you look carefully, you could see the use of subliminals of things airbrushed in. And I don't have direct facts, but given the importance of viewership and people investing money in advertising, it wouldn't come as a shock to me that background subliminals are used in broadcast media as a way to help people to want to tune in or want to make a purchase. So this is, you know, hopefully something HDNet. I just have a sense about Mark Cuban and Dan Rather and you that there's some very caring people out there that want us to really get important information that's accurate and not manipulative.
Right.
So
that's exactly true, and it's harder work not to just you know, go skim the surface. It's harder for a journalist, and it's harder for a consumer, the viewer, the reader, or the listener. But it pays off in the end. And so we just really do have to do our homework. And maybe the least we can do once in a while is turn off the bombardment of noise, of commercials. And I know I'm saying this, and I'm in broadcast. You know, I don't think it would hurt if each of us every once in a while just turn things off for a while. You know, maybe it's only an hour, maybe it's a day, whatever you can deal with, and maybe it's a media fast for a couple of hours, and just let your brain not be so absorbed and consumed with junk food. And this is particularly when I'm talking to young people, we all like to go, when we're in a hurry in particular, go through the fast food, get a quick bite, and we think somehow, oh gosh, I feel so much better and I'm well nourished. Well, just keep in mind that was, you know, a hamburger or french fries or a taco. And, you know, while I'm not putting down junk food, we have to recognize the fact that we do have to sit down at some point and get a well-balanced meal of our vegetables and our fruits and fresh meats if you're a meat eater, or, you know, tofu, whatever it is. The same thing with news. You can't survive on junk food and through the drive-through and expect to be healthy. You certainly cannot survive on junk food news and expect your intelligence and your thinking to be well-balanced. It's impossible. So we have to take that time to read magazines that aren't necessarily Time and Newsweek. Read those, but then read something that's a little off the beaten path. You know, read newspapers like Urban Spectrum and La Voz, the Denver Daily News, Denver Weekly News. Watch shows on TV that are on PBS versus just the networks, and try to get a balanced supplement, if you will, of your information. And I think that prescription, leads to a balanced intellect and a balanced knowledge about what's happening in the world.
Ah, so it's one thing to say your news is fair and balanced, but does it really pass the Tamara Bank scrutiny test, folks? That's where I am thinking, and I don't. We may want to see if we can nudge Tamara. She may already know of people doing this. If we possibly at some point in the future went to your website, could we see some recommendations of places that you consider to be good news sources?
Well, and I wouldn't necessarily recommend one that's better than the other, but I would recommend some that maybe people haven't heard about.
Okay. All right. So
we
want to be able to expand our news horizons.
Right. I mean, of course, being a journalist, and most of us are liberal, you know, the Huffington Post and the neighborhood newspapers, not just the national and international papers, but reading your neighborhood paper that comes out once a week, maybe just once a month, you can really get a good understanding about what's happening in your community, which is so incredibly valuable. And then do read those international papers. Read those papers from Sudan, the Sudan Tribune. Just Google, a country or a foreign city, and then put newspaper behind it, and you'll be amazed at all the information. You know, watch Al Jazeera in English, unless you know Arabic. So there's so much out there to really get informed about, and people say, well, gosh, that's so overwhelming, I don't have time. Well, you have time to watch, you know, 2 hours of reality TV. Why not switch out 1 week and just spend some time reading some newspapers and magazines and websites that are just a little bit different from the traditional mainstream media. People can make time for what they want to make time for.
Yeah. I think that's so important. Now, one of the interesting things on from our last program that you made mention, as I was thinking of the work of Marshall Rosenberg, that basically says all people have similar. He talks about 9 basic human needs that he distilled from the work of a South American psychologist, and Manfred Max Neef was his name. And so if we think of these people doing this genocide, his way of describing it would be that there are some people, in their attempts to meet their needs, are using some strategies that are very ineffective and, in fact, at times, harmful to others. And certainly we couldn't argue too much about the harm when people are being killed and enslaved.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he would bring us back to the point of here they are trying to meet their needs. And you mentioned on the previous program that, and I don't know if that's still going on, that they're willing to trade a slave for a vial of vaccine that they use to help with the health of their cattle.
Yes, that is in my documentary. Yeah, absolutely. And so if I understand, I'm not sure if there's a question there, but in fact, that's how the slaves are brought out. I mean, there has to be some value trade, if you will. And so what is just as valuable, if not more valuable, to the slave owners are their cattle and their other livestock. So what they do not have access to, easy access to anyway, is Nvidium and its cattle vaccine. So one vial of cattle vaccine is about $50. So the Arab Dinka Peace Committee and CSI work with the slave owners, and they give them the cattle vaccine. So you might be, you know, me as a woman, I might be worth two vials of vaccine for my slave retrieval, for my liberation. And so to some people, they think, well, isn't this so controversial? You know, you're creating this slave trade market by perpetuating. I mean, what if I, as a former slave, now I'm kidnapped again and go back, or I'm maybe not really a slave and I just pretend that I am and I'm working with somebody on the Arab side. A couple of things to keep in mind is, number one, whenever the abolitionists come and they free the slaves, part of the process, along with interviewing them, getting their names, when do they think they were taken, family members that maybe were either killed, all this background about them, rather killed or taken into slavery. They also take their picture, and they document this, put this in a database at their offices in Switzerland, as well as make it available to the United Nations and anyone in the world who is willing to listen to, number one, recognize the fact that these people do exist, and they were slaves, they were taken into slavery. And secondly, by keeping track of who they're liberating, who they're working with, they're able to cut down, if not completely, throw out the idea that somebody is just using this to make money or
yeah.
to get more cattle vaccine. And
okay.
the other important thing is that the slave raids in South Sudan do not occur anymore. So Khartoum is not sending the Janjaweed back down to the south. So there's not this continual market, if you will, of humans. Of humans
okay.
going into slavery in and out. Now, with
yeah.
that said, that's in the south. In Darfur, and from the up in the north, that those slave raids are just starting again, and that's in a different part of the region. But by and large, the slave raids in the south, where CSI and the Arab Dinka Peace Committee are working, are no longer occurring.
Huh. Well, that's certainly a positive. As I've been contemplating this, something came to mind, and to me, I don't even know if it would be possible to sit down with the people and say, okay, right now we're trading some vaccine for people that you have that are doing work for you. Now, yeah, if there was and if we could help protect your cattle for each one that we could protect. How many people, you know, if we could guarantee to do this, how many people could you free? Because right now there's this vaccine that gets the job done.
Right.
Well, through a recent information through some of my sources, there is a chemical that is actually widely used, chlorine dioxide, and a researcher figured out how to take this chemical and actually make it usable for human or animal consumption.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, of anything that I've seen, and hopefully before I meet with you either tomorrow or on Sunday, bring you a copy of a video in which this person explains how using this substance, basically putting it in water and consuming it, will wipe out, I mean, malaria, you name it. I mean, practically any kind of degenerative disease,
mm-hmm.
this thing will go after. bacteria, fungus, you name it. And so my dream, my heart reached out and said, oh my gosh, I don't think these people yet know about this. And if there could, and plus a year's supply for the average person of this stuff is $20. So this substance that does these miracle cures for people is very affordable.
Right.
And so anyway, my simple-mindedness said, geez, wouldn't it be nice if we could sit down with those people and make a deal and said, look, how many people are you free if we can guarantee to protect your cattle?
Mm-hmm.
And get a lot more people freed at very low cost, because apparently a vial of this is $50 of the vaccine, and that adds up fast, because I don't know how many of those they need.
Right. I think that's really a great idea, and quite a, you know, scientific breakthrough, as they would see it on their end. A couple of things to keep in mind. Many of the slaves are working in the agricultural area, in the field and the ranches and farms and such, but many are domestics. So you still have that component there, and I'm not putting water on your idea by any means, but I think even deeper than that is the motivation to have slaves is not the motivation based on the leadership, the heads of state in Sudan, including President Omar al-Bashir, it's based on race and religion.
Ah.
So while, and I think it's a really great idea to provide, I mean, if the people say, hey, we don't even really need any slaves, I mean, what's the point? Because you do have sort of this, on some level, you have the leadership, the government, and then you have the people, just like you do here in the U.S. You have the administration, regardless of the party affiliation, and then you have the people, and that division is deeper depending on which country you're speaking about at this particular time. So it may be, you know, the people, the grassroots folks, they say, you know what, we don't really need slavery. You know, if we've got this Navidium to take care of our cattle, I mean, that could happen. Change happens from the grassroots area more than it does from the top down. But my concern would be is that it's not based on that. It's based on the fact that they're Christians and they're black, and they're using religion, in this case, Islam, to kill the infidel.
Yeah.
So it's just a little bit deeper, but that is
sure.
A tool, just like, you know, using the Navidium to get a person out of slavery. It's a tool. Is it a cure-all? No, but it is a tool. And to your point with this other chemical that would be, it sounds like, could be even more effective and less expensive, it could be a tool to eradicate slavery. Yeah.
Well, I'll see what I can do to bring that into the hands of the people you work with at CSI International.
It would definitely be worth having a conversation with them. I agree.
And folks, we just invite you to kind of, you know, take this in, if this calls to you, because there's so many places that your love can go, and we want you to, you know, be involved in areas that have a meaning to you. Once again, would you share your website and the website for the CSI people and how we can reach you, Tamara?
Yes. I'm sorry, a train was just going by. I think you asked me to share some information. Yes, if you would like to contact Pastor Heidi McGinnis with CSI and CSI as a whole, you can go to their website at www.csicatfamii-int.org, and then you can reach me at tamarataz@msn.com. And my website is yourtazmedia.com or .org. I've got both.
Okay.
Sites.
Ah, well, this is wonderful. As we have a couple of minutes in wrap up, I certainly want to, you know, kind of invite you to share the things that you would consider, you know, important to inspire, you know, people. So, take it away, Tamara.
Well, I just really encourage people to think more, to dig deeper, to reach higher, to pray harder, and to do more listening than talking, no matter what it is that you're doing in your life, whether you're raising children or whether you're an independent journalist covering stories around the world. And I know that we each have a talent and a skill to make the world a better place to live. And if that world is within our four walls or on our block, that's just as important and relative and relevant as it is changing the world on a global perspective. And I do encourage people to come out and join us and watch the documentary short tomorrow night, Thursday, June 18th, starting at 5:30 at Jazz at Jack's at the Denver Pavilions on the 16th Street Mall. And then on Father's Day, on Sunday the 21st, bring the family out from 3 to 6 to the El Camino Tavern in the Highlands at West 32nd and Lowell. And get a chance to talk to abolitionists, to talk to me if you want to find out more information about the work I'm doing, and just really make a contribution, not just monetarily, but emotionally and spiritually to an effort that is going to take a lot of prayers to make effect in the world. So.
Thank you, Tamara. Thank you for taking time to be on the program, and beloved listeners, thank you for tuning in. We have used this time, hopefully, to a blessing to all, and invite you to tune in again each and every Saturday to Advanced Living Radio. And until we meet again, God bless, and goodbye for now. Let go and let God. Let go.